All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck nicks? What the fucksters? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. Today on the show, I talked to Daniel Kaluuya. You know him from the films Get Out, Black Panther, Queen, and Slim. He won a Golden Globe for his portrayal of Fred Hampton in Judas and the Black Messiah, and he's nominated for the Best Supporting Actor Academy Award. Big time, man. I talked to him. He was in, where was he when I talked to him? He was here, wasn't he? Why can't I remember anything? What's going on with my head? Why is every day a month? Why is every day a week? How did that thing you made turn out? Did it turn out okay? I mentioned a painting last week, and a painting that means something to me, of the door of the Air America studio, and I know who painted it. It was painted by Kristen Anderson Barrick. She was a fan of the show, and she made the painting. It's now hanging in my house, along with other stuff, painting by Scotty Young of me interviewing Fozzie Bear. I've got a Drew Friedman caricature of me. These are my prized possessions art-wise. Very exciting. That's what I've been doing. I've been trying to set up that office, and I like sitting up there. It's coming along well. But I have a lot of stuff, man. It's like this never-ending process of going through a lifetime's worth of stuff. All my stuff has never really been in one place like it is now. I had a lot of this stuff in the garage, but I also had a storage unit. So now everything of me is around. And there's a lot of stuff that I feel like there's pressure to be emotionally connected to it, like paraphernalia from TV shows I've done and stuff, like the backs of chairs. And I don't know what to do with that stuff. I don't really want to make a trophy case. I don't know what to, I'm not going to hang this stuff up. I don't know. There's only a few things I want to be reminded of. I have glow calendars and glow paraphernalia that, I mean, I did that show, and I think that the show itself is enough for me to be connected to, but all these little tchotchkes and things, they build up over the years. Things people send me, fan art, tchotchkes, things from shoots, laminates, all that. How do you decide what you really give a shit about or what you're emotionally attached to? You go through it and you realize like, oh, okay, yeah, I remember this. Right, that was when, that wasn't a great time. But I have all these notebooks full of stuff. I'm never going to read them, but you feel this desire to hold on to them. So now I come up with this great idea. I'm going to file everything. That's my solution. No more stacks, files. I'm going to file things under little notebooks, big notebooks, legal pad pages from different points in time. My stamp collection. You didn't know I had a stamp collection, did you? I didn't either. I kind of did, but I didn't really think about it much. But I was one of these people, I still kind of am sometimes, but I haven't lately. If I'd go to the post office and I'd see a nice, kind of cool new panel of stamps, you know, they're all in one the sheet of stamps. For a while there, they were doing actually pictures with the stamps themselves. I've got some of that stuff from several years ago. Who's it worth anything to? What am I going to do with it? Like, I have things where I look at it, it's like, this is probably a collector's item. I could probably sell this for a lot of money. Somebody would want this. I don't know what to do with it. I keep it not because I'm emotionally attached to it, but because I know somebody else might want it. Or I could just throw it away, or I could throw it back into the great tide pool of used garbage. I could always do that. Who am I calling you? I could just put some of that stuff into a Goodwill thing, but that backfired once on me. I put a poster that somebody sent me, or a piece of art, a framed thing. I gave it to Goodwill, and it made it back to the guy, and it was very insulting. So all books that are signed, that are sent to me and signed, I have to keep. All pieces of art, I have to keep. But the stuff that isn't labeled as such, maybe I should go lowball it, give it to Goodwill, and let somebody discover it. And be like, what an amazing find. How rare do you find this? What would that be? This is a notebook of Mark Maron's writings. Who? Mark Maron. This is a little moleskin notebook that I got it. I found it at Goodwill. So you can't write in it. You found a filled up notebook at Goodwill and you bought it. It's Mark Maron's. I don't know that guy. Mark Maron, the comedian, this is his scribblings. You can't read them. But I know it's his because he put his name at the front of the book. This is so cool. Mark who? How much you pay for it? $2. $2 for a notebook you can't use? It's Mark Maron's. I don't know who that is. Maybe I'll keep it. I'll file it. I have a panel of Star Wars stamps. I have a panel of Jimi Hendrix stamps. I have some John Lennon stamps from another country. I didn't know I was a stamp collector, but clearly I have a small, probably highly valuable collection of stamps. I have the Blues Master stamps. I have the superhero stamps. I just buy them on the way out. I don't know. What are they worth, man? I have the commemorative stamps of Charles and Diana's wedding. Yeah, I bought those when I was in Europe at the time of their wedding. I was in France as a younger man, and I'm like, those commemorative stamps, they're going to be worth some money. I guess it's just in my head. I had the stamp collecting book. I had my dad's stamp collection when I was a little kid, and then I had the little collection where you had to have those weird little sticky, the little hinges that you had to lick and put one on back of the stamp and one in your stamp book. I never had anything valuable. Just, you know, you're just waiting, man. Maybe someday I'll find the upside down plane stamp. Maybe the upside down plane stamp is in my future. That's what trains people to find garbage that's worth millions of dollars. It's like they start you young. It's like stamp collecting, coin collecting. Maybe you'll be the one to find the gold doubloon from the pirate booty. Huh? Maybe you'll be the one to find the Hitler stamps. Huh? Maybe it'll be you. This will set you in on a lifetime of poking through shit at flea markets and Goodwills. Maybe you'll find that thing at that garage sale that's worth $1 billion. Hey, what is this? What's this? What's on this napkin? Does that say Picasso? Shh. How much is the napkin? The napkin with the doodle? How much is the napkin? How much? $2? Shh. Holy shit, dude. Here you go. Thank you. It's a fucking Picasso napkin. Dude. This is going to be, dude, it's a fucking Picasso napkin. We're taking it over to MoMA today. Yeah, hi, is there somebody here we can talk to about this napkin? It's a Picasso napkin. No. Isn't this MoMA, Museum of Modern Art? Yeah, but this is just, this is for tickets to get in. I got a Picasso napkin. Check it out. Dude, show them the Picasso napkin. $2 we paid for it. Okay. Do you guys want to go into the museum? Who do we talk to about this Picasso napkin? Maybe you go to an appraiser of some kind? That napkin doesn't look old enough to be a Picasso napkin. It's totally a Picasso napkin. Okay. Do you guys want to step aside so I can help these people? Hey, listen. This is an interesting thing. When I was talking last week or whenever it was, Monday, about how I have that feeling of like, wow, this is great. And it's coupled with the feeling of like, what difference does it make? Doesn't matter. Like any joy that I have is tempered by the idea that, you know, who cares? We're all going to die. It's meaningless. But I love it. Doesn't matter. It's going to go away. That. And my producer, Brendan, thought it might be trauma, which is possible. Might be just straight up existential observation or neurosis, which has been with me a long time. But someone brought up, and this is a spin that I enjoy and I wouldn't have thought of. They said, the meditation is working. Like, that is the first step to realizing everything just is. And you're in it in the moment. That you can look at life as it is all at once. And that is enlightenment. So when I go, man, I feel pretty good, but who cares? It's going to be over soon. I'm on the verge of enlightenment. Don't call me negative. I'm about to be a fucking Buddha, baby. And don't shoot me. If you find the Buddha, Kill him. Don't kill me, though. I'm never going to be a real Buddha. Come on. I'm not going to let myself get that heavy. So Sammy the cat is now officially out of his fucking mind. Full-on cat. Does a sideways crab walk. Sideways Sammy. I've got this bathroom with this weird tile, and it seems to fuck with his head. So he does the sideways crab walk, the hoppy crab sideways Sammy. And Buster and Sammy are starting to do a thing together, getting to know each other, which means Buster kind of pops him in the head a couple of times. Sammy rolls over on his back, gets submissive, lays himself out, and basically says, come on, man. It's just me and you. We're the only cats in the house. What, are you going to be a dick to me? I mean, I'll take it for a little while, but let's fucking jam. Let's fucking get on with this. Let's have some fun, old man. Buster's like, I'm not old, man. I'm only 5. Yeah, well, I'm fresh. I'm fucking 2 months old, so you're old, bro. Let me fucking run you ragged. Hey, just take it down a notch, punk. Hey, don't hit me like that. I'll fucking stand right up. I'll take it. Look at me. I'm taking it. I'm taking the hit. I'm still right here, bro. I'm still right here. All right. Just, I get it. Just relax. Hey, leave my tail alone. You want to go? That's what's happening. Reminds me of many of the relationships I've been in. Just waiting for them to realize I'm just annoying and it's going to be that way. And either you love me or you don't. Daniel Kaluuya is here on this show. The new movie is Judas and the Black Messiah. He plays Fred Hampton. He's great in it. He's great in everything he does. You've seen him in a lot of things. Get Out, Black Panther, Queen and Slim. He's an Academy Award nominated actor right now for Best Supporting. Just won the Golden Globe. And I enjoy talking to him. So this is, I'm going to share it with you. I'm going to share it with you right now. All right? He's also about to host Saturday Night Live this weekend. Talk about that too. We talked about a lot of stuff. It's surprising. You'll be surprised at who influenced him the most. Listen up. Me and Daniel Kaluuya. Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer. And I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago. Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale. Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF.
Hello.
Hey, man.
What an honor.
It is an honor. It is an honor for me, sir.
Wow. Feeling is mutual. I think I saw you. Where's that on Sunset, the comedy?
The Comedy Store?
Yeah. Is that the red one?
Yes.
Yeah. The comedy.
The dark, horrific castle of dark comedy.
I didn't see you perform, but I saw you when I was walking in, because I think I was switching Neil Brennan.
And then, yes, that makes sense.
And Donnell Rollins was on that show.
Donnell, yeah, Neil, yeah. Yep, that would have been me. But you remembered me walking by because I was exuding negative energy, or was I pleasant? Did I say hi?
I just know your face. I listen to your podcast. I know your face. So
it's so funny when your assistant was like making sure that we weren't using any video, but she was sort of like, you're not using any. I'm like, no, we don't use any video. It always is weird to me because I'm like, do we not know something? Is he going to show up without hair? What is happening? Is there?
It's like I'm an alien. It's like an alien being.
This is me without all the makeup, man. I'm not from here.
Yeah.
Where are you? Did you move here?
I'm still on the move. I'm still figuring out where my base is. I go back and forth to LA and London. But it's weird because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
nothing usually shoots in LA. So LA is just a place to be, and then you go to, I don't know, Cleveland or Chicago. And now because of the pandemic, not a lot of things are filming.
Right.
So you're just in LA or in London. So you're in one place for a period of time.
Hanging around.
But I don't mind it. I kind of like it.
Yeah, I think I understand retirement. I didn't think I would. But I think I do now. I think I understand.
Are you thinking about retirement now? Is that what space you're heading?
I think what I'm thinking about is, like, I'm pretty good at doing nothing. Like, I don't mind just having the whole day to think and dick around in my house or do little things. I don't mind it. You?
Yeah. I love it. It's one of my favorite things in the world. I realized in this pandemic I actually like me. I think I'm pretty chill. I like what I'm into. So I kind of like, oh, that's interesting. And I'll go into this direction, that direction. I wake up really early. I still wake up like 6 a.m. and then 4 p.m. comes and I've just not really done much. But I've done a lot, but it's like more of just like going, wandering here and there.
Yeah.
I especially love the beginning of the pandemic because no one really knew how to work.
Right.
Or do anything. So it was kind of like you had more you time.
Yeah, because no one was doing anything. You didn't have to be in a competition. You didn't have to resent anybody. No. It was just sort of like level playing field. Everyone's terrified and not working.
Yeah, that's how the Western society works. Yeah.
So look, congratulations on winning the prize, the Golden Globe Prize.
Thank you. Thanks, Mark.
Was that something? How could that not be great? It's exciting, right? Even if you pretend like you don't care, you do care, right?
What's caring?
Does it mean something to you?
The journey's the goal. You know what I'm saying? That's how I feel. That's how I feel. It's like kind of like, oh wow, like look how far I've come. Is how I kind of process.
Yeah.
Process those kind of moments. You're like, wow, like it's such a kind of. I see it more as checkpoints, and go, wow, this is like. Wow, I really was just like saying to a friend at a bus stop that I wanted to do this, and now I'm in a house in LA winning a Globe. That you go, wow, that's what you kind of take in. The kind of like, it's such a moment where like this has happened.
I think that's true. Yeah.
So in terms of the Globe, it's really interesting because it's like you win the Golden Globe, but because it was at your house, you didn't have the experience of winning the Golden Globe. You didn't actually have the whole thing around it. So it's a very different experience in that sense. I actually liked it. I just vibed out and just chilled. It is
a very odd reality that, you know, no dressing up, no red carpet, no photographs, no people going, Daniel, over here, Daniel, over here, Daniel, yes. Daniel, yeah. Over here, Daniel. Yeah. You missed.
But that's
that
the weird reality. That's a weird reality as well. the norm is weird. That's my thing. It's like when I was on the first red carpet, people were shouting at me, "Smile, smile!" I'm no,
Daniel, over here, at the hand, Daniel, snapping their finger.
It's like, if you want to see someone smile, tell a joke. Like, it's like, tell a joke. Let's say smile. What kind of smile are you getting?
You got to work on the smile. I never was able to figure out what the exact red carpet photo shoot smile was. I always have my mouth half open. I'm never happy with it. But some people you notice, they obviously have the fucking smile nailed. They got it worked out. Mm. They know exactly what muscles to do. They know they have a set smile. You don't have one? You haven't put any thought into that?
No, I haven't put any thought into that.
Good.
I just kind of go, let me keep the neutral face. Let me just go.
Neutral face. That's good.
And then we're out.
Right.
If you make me smile, you make me smile. I just want it to be natural. Whatever it is, I want it to be natural.
I think neutral face is good. I go with the the closed mouth smile. That's what I do. the slight grin, you know, like this.
Yeah, that's what they call it, the smize, right? The smize.
Something like that. I don't know what it is. It's just short of being angry. Just a kind of slightly. No, that's not true.
It's kind of constipated is what you're saying. It's a kind of constipated.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Fine. Yeah. I'm not letting the joy out. If that's what constipated means.
No, you are not letting shit go. You are not letting shit go.
I do hold on to some shit in my heart there, buddy.
Yeah.
So I was wondering about like how to start this because like I always like I've been talking to English people lately and I seem to be getting along with them better. I don't know when that happened. But it wasn't that I was judgmental of English people. I just always assumed that there was some part of me that when I was younger, that the way they talked made me believe they thought they were better than me. Whereas opposed, it was just the way British people talk. So it's gotten much better, and I've been surprised lately by my British experience. I had Hugh Grant on, and that guy made me laugh a lot. I was not expecting that at all.
Have you ever met
that guy?
No, I've never met him, but I'm seeing these recent interviews. That guy looks like a real guy, Hugh Grant.
He's a funny guy.
But he has like an authenticity to him that I was quite surprised about.
Yeah, me too.
Like, oh man, he's a real brother.
Yeah.
I kind of like his energy.
Yeah, I think that was, I don't think he was always that, but I think it's come to that. But I have no sense of the city or how people, you know, grow up there or live there. Can you tell me, like, what part of town you grew up in? What, you know, what was the story?
I grew up in Camden Town, Camden.
And that's part of London?
It's part of London, Northwest London. And like, so basically on the borderline, like I grew up on the borderline of Camden and Islington. Grew up on what you guys would call a project.
Oh, really?
And then, so yeah, housing, like we call it estates.
That's so a much nicer name.
I'm realizing now. But the thing is, estates is kind of like when you're honest, my memory of an estate, I never called it an estate. You'd call it flats.
Yeah.
You'd call it the flats and stuff. So I think the estate came like when I was like more late teens than, I think that's what middle class and upper class people call it. So then you just go, oh yeah, it's the estates.
So
but then we started calling them estates. But I don't know. But I just remember I didn't really consciously call it, oh, that estate.
It sounds like something they labeled them to feel better about themselves.
And yeah, like rough area, Camden.
Yeah.
Rough area, like a lot of characters, a lot of grew up around a lot of people.
You got brothers and sisters?
I've got an older sister. Yeah.
I've got a couple.
I've got two sisters in Uganda. Yeah.
You got three sisters in Uganda?
No, I've got two sisters in Uganda.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you travel there? Have you been there?
Yeah, I've been there. I've been there a couple times. But when you go there like 6 weeks at a go. So you're just there. So it was quite an intense time. Yeah.
You can't just, it's not a weekend trip.
No, you got too many family. I got too much family for all that. I got too many family. Like you have to basically, you're visiting probably three homes a day for like 2 weeks, and then you can have a break and a holiday. But it's like boom, 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 boom. You're like seeing everyone giving gifts and saying hello, boom, 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 eating food. Yeah, you gain a lot of weight. You eat a lot of food.
Who lives there from your family? Your two sisters and you just
My two sisters. Yeah.
And your father's there?
No, he's dead.
Oh, he's dead? When did that happen? Yeah.
That happened when I was a kid, yeah.
Sorry, buddy.
No, that's all right. It's all right. Either. It's cool.
But so the sisters are there. Now, when was the first time you went there to Uganda?
7 years old.
And then did
seven
you go?
7 years old, I went to Uganda.
And did you go back like later in life?
Yeah, I went back seven, went back again at 15, went back again at 22, and went there like big chunks of time. And then like going to Uganda really changed my perspective on life.
I can't imagine.
Like you kind of go there and then it's, you know what it is? I went there, first time I went there, I was seven. Reality check. I remember the electricity cut out.
Right.
That's a reality check as a 7-year-old. Yeah. Like you kind of, I'm watching football, my team's Arsenal, yeah?
Yeah.
Watching football. And then I'm like, I can't believe I'm in Africa and I'm watching football. Then electricity cuts out.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there to my cousin. And I was like, what happened? He said, the electricity cuts out. I said, well, put it back on.
Yeah.
He said, we can't. I said, why? He said, because it's out. I said, when is it coming back? He said, I don't know. Bro, I cried so deeply, bro. I was like, what's happening? And then an hour later, I was like, bro, they put some candles out. We started speaking. We started talking. I was like, oh, wow. I didn't really need to. It's not needed electricity. Right. It's just like it's a tool. It's not necessarily. But I was made to feel that way. I felt that way at seven.
Right.
I felt that way. And it just educated me like that's not the case. I just had a lot of experiences that challenged my perception.
Yeah.
And then that like the way I live my life is just a way, it's not the way. And
Well, it must be completely different culturally down there. I have no idea. It takes me a long time to learn the history of anything. I just had Serge Tankian on, who is in the System of a Down, the band, and he's Armenian. And he had to educate me about Armenia. I don't like it. I guess it's because I live in the United States and I'm, I have a sort of entitled brain or whatnot, but I have absolutely no sense. And I guess you probably didn't either when you were seven, what Uganda would be like.
I had a sense of the vibe and the energy because when I grew up, essentially in your house is Uganda. It's a Ugandan culture. It's everyone's, your uncle is a Ugandan vibe. So it was like a country version of my home.
Right, right.
And like, and then so then, and then yeah, and I was like, and then I was there. It was just, yeah, it was just a reality check and kind of like, and but I just didn't see it. I'm kind of person that I just go and go, oh, if this is where I'm at, what does this say where I'm at? I rarely go into things with expectations. Still? I just accept what's happening, and I'll keep moving forward.
Well, how is it different? What is the government like down there? I mean, is it dictatorship, or what is it down there? Do you know?
No. It's Museveni's in charge. There's a whole Bobby Wine situation.
Yeah.
And then it's tough. Museveni's been in charge for a very long time. So I'm not into like, oh, I don't like study. Like I took in a couple things up during the last election. So yeah. I know the bare bones, but I wouldn't say I'm skilled enough to kind of speak about it on a platform, on a public platform. You know what I'm saying? So
sure.
I really want to go into that space if I'm not fully equipped. So,
but,
it's,
but needless to say, it's not a democracy per se.
He's had power for a while. Let's say that he's had power for a while.
Because when I was growing up, when I was a little kid, I remember when like Idi Amin was culturally the guy in charge because he made such a global sort of impact. Like everybody knew who Idi Amin was. It was crazy.
Yeah. My mom met him.
Your mom met him?
Yeah, I remember when Last King of Scotland came out.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, my Last King of Scotland. And she goes, oh. I met him. I said, what? What do you mean? Now you tell me that you met him. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, what happened? It's like, she's like, yeah, he visited my primary school, which is like an elementary school. Uh-huh. Like he visited and she shook his hand. I said, what was he like? He said, he was big. It's like, yeah, well then, like, I can see that. If you're a little girl, I can see how that makes sense. Like Idi Amin. I don't like the stuff I haven't. There's people in my life that I've kind of been exposed to. I'm like, oh, like I want to arrive to it from an independent thought and perspective, as opposed to, because a lot of things in life you kind of just, you've only heard through other people's opinions on what they think. So I kind of wanted to really educate myself on that when I got some time. And so
did you do it or you haven't yet?
I haven't yet. I know stuff. It's like if I watch Last King of Scotland, I'm like, yeah, that's a director's point of view.
Sure.
I mean, that's a narrator's point of view about it, you know? So I take that, but I how can I have an opinion on Idi Amin if I've watched a film or read a couple articles or heard a couple stories?
Yeah.
That I've just stumbled across, you know, as opposed to purposely go, oh, I want to grow more about this. I want to learn more about this. But yeah.
Well, so did your mother left before she could really have an assessment of his leadership or what he did to the country? How old was she when she left?
She, I don't know how old she,
yeah.
Like, she left just before I was born.
So oh, really?
Just before I was born, she left. Yeah. So,
what did she leave? Did she run away or did she just want to move?
I don't know. I think it was a light jog. It was a lie. She was like, I mean, she was late for the plane is what happened. So she was like, yeah. let me jog my way to the airport. whilst pregnant. She just wanted more opportunities. I think she just wanted more for me.
Oh yeah.
She wanted more for her family. And she just decided, yeah, let's go.
And what did she do when you were going up for work?
She works with kids. She was special needs kids.
So, oh, really?
So she did that, yeah. She's got great energy.
She must be proud of you.
She's cool, man. She's like, she's tough. She's tough. Like everything, like I got, it was my birthday a few weeks ago and then she was sending me a birthday card and was like, yo, it's amazing. Da, 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 da. And she never congratulated me without saying, I hope you know what's next. Question mark or like, we're looking forward to seeing what's next. Question.
Oh, the pressure.
It's always keep. I would even, you know what it is? I used to feel it was pressure, Mark.
Yeah.
But now I'm just like, you know what? It's the truth. Because like a lot of time you get these kind of instances and it's not necessarily the thing. If anything comes quickly, it's not the thing. Mm. I mean, it's like, all right, cool. So like when people ask me before I got Oscar nominated and that, I was like, yeah, it's like a master's. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's,
yeah.
It's like you get a master's. It's not like you've completed life because you've got a master's. What are you going to do with it?
Right.
I mean, how are you going to use it? That's how I see these like checkpoints in my life. I go, oh, wow, this is incredible. This fact is coming now. There's a Master P quote. He said, if this white man thinks I'm worth 1 million, then I'm least worth 10. And I see that as the same principle going, oh, wow, if this has come to me now, then what else can I get?
Interesting.
You know what I mean? What else is there? So, and I think that's a mentality that she really instilled in me. I think that's like my settings, because of, she's just like, is there more?
Yeah.
You know,
don't settle.
Are you able to grow?
Yeah.
It's like, are you a bigger tree?
Uh huh.
Like, you don't, like, are you going to go, is this my height? Are you a bigger tree? You're never going to tell a tree stop growing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? How big can you grow? If a tree grows really big,
yeah,
at a certain point, you're not going to go, oh, well, you're big enough.
Yeah.
You're going at your own.
Yeah. You know, eventually you say, we could build a house out of this.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to chop it down. I.e. capitalism.
Exactly. There you go. We can spread this tree out without it being alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's make some paper. Yeah, let's make some money.
A lot of paper.
Cut this tree and make some money. So it's that.
It's interesting what you say about Idi Amin in terms of trying to find a point of view on him for yourself, because it strikes me that I barely knew the Fred Hampton story. You know, I knew, like, when I watched the movie, I'm like, oh, I know this story, kind of. I remember this, but I had no specifics of it.
Mm.
And I wonder, you know, like, how did you inform yourself or make his experience your experience in the way that you were satisfied in terms of taking him on?
That's a really interesting question. Can I you say that again? Like, in what sense do you mean?
I mean, in the sense that, like, in the way that you were just talking about Idi, like, you know, you hear a lot of stories, you read a lot of, you know, is that, you know, but you don't really necessarily know if you have your own opinion of him or know enough about him to talk about him from your own point of view. But it seems like in order to play Fred Hampton, that you would have to really absorb a lot in order to, you know, become him from internally. And I was just wondering, you know, where did that start and how did you do that? Because now, whether you like it or not, you're going to be intrinsically, you know, tied to Fred Hampton in the sense, in the cultural mind, because a lot of people don't know that story. A lot of young people don't know that story, and you're going to be their point of reference. And it's interesting. Mm-hmm. You did a great job, I thought. And I was just curious, given the way you think and your sort of your passion for the present, you know, how did you start the work on that?
It's scary work.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest with you, it's because I think what you're hinting on is that you get to a point where you'll have to make a decision and go, this is it. And this is as much as I know at this point.
This is the guy.
And then we're going to move forward. And you know what I mean? And we're going to have to move forward in a certain direction. I think because Shaka King, the director of Judas, incredible director, I remember he mentioned that the Black Panther had a reading list, so I asked him for the reading list. So in order to be a fully fledged Panther, you needed to go on 6 weeks of political education. So I had this reading list. I was reading the reading list before, way before shoot, and I was just taking it in before the green light. I was just kind of I wanted to read it anyway.
Like, what was
so
on
I was
it?
Reading it. It was like Chairman Mao, Marcus Garvey, Franz Fanon, a lot of communist, left wing. Fascinating teachings and strategies and outlooks and ideas and concepts and perspectives.
Interesting.
And I was just taking all that stuff in. And then like Malcolm X was on it as well. Malcolm X biography. And I was taking all that stuff in and I was like, oh, like it got to a point where I can't stop being in my head about it.
Yeah.
I was reading it in order to kind of, I didn't want to look at the Panthers and at Chairman Fred. I wanted to look with the Panthers and with Chairman Fred, but it gets to a point where you're going to have to step up and embody him.
You know?
Be that vessel for him and look at him as an individual and do the words and go for the voice.
Mm.
So you start that. And then Shaka did an incredible job, like, by pushing me. I think a year before the shoot, we did the speeches. We did these actual speeches.
A year?
A year before the shoot, wow. We did these actual speeches. And when I hadn't done any dialect work, I hadn't done anything, it was just a guesstimate. And then we did that, and then we recorded it, and it was a lot. It was so important. I think it took me a month to watch it back because really, I was nervous.
Mm.
But no, I was nervous. I just knew the minute I watched it, I'll start working. I'll start going, that's not, I want to fine tune that. I want to fine tune this. This doesn't sound like him. This doesn't sound like him. But it was so important to do it. And then watching it, it was like, it was never as bad as I thought it was going to be. I mean, and then you just kind of go, all right, cool. This is manageable. And then we just built from there. But yeah, and then with Audrey LeCrone, incredible dialect coach, did a lot of work in looking at his speeches and XYZ. And then I took myself to Chicago went to Maywood, went to his hometown, went to his old schools and his old homes, all these places. And it was, it's like a treasure hunt. You don't actually know what you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know. You just know, I want to be in a space. I want to be in an environment that allows me to think in a certain way. Do you know what I'm saying? And allows me to make decisions and grow something and move me.
Right.
Cellularly move me and spiritually move me in his space. Because I would look at his speeches and go, I want to move an audience the way I feel moved by him.
Were you able to understand the social and political momentum and message of the Panthers in terms of truly believing them?
I think I believed it beforehand. It's like I just didn't have those words. I didn't have those. I wasn't exposed to that material. But I knew, being a young black man navigating a Western society, navigating a majority white space most times, there is a frustration, especially if you love yourself, especially if you respect yourself. There is a frustration of the resistance that you get from that. You know what I mean? And like you, and that it creates a, you know what I mean? It creates an energy that I feel the Panther Party represented.
Yeah.
So when me taking that in, it allowed me to, it was almost soothing to me. Yeah. It was like, made me feel less crazy. It made me feel like, I don't feel like I'm wild to be in a world commanding what my spirit is. Exactly. I'm just being what I am. You know what I'm saying? I'm not even what it's like, that it's the audacity for people to believe that it's theirs to give to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How can you give that to me?
Yeah.
How, like, it's like, it's, I am that. So they embodied that. They had the words for that. They had this, the kind of strategies and the plans for that. And they did it through feeding kids. You know what I'm saying? Feeding kids with a breakfast program, with educating kids, with like free medical care, Chicago, with all the number, and with the Rainbow Coalition, it was just like, it was a level of empowerment. So it was just like, oh wow, this already happened. My feelings already happened. People already did it. It's just deepened what was already there. It's how I felt. It's more in my body. It's more in my,
yeah.
I mean, right. it's like, it shows how dangerous fear can be.
Right.
And people are scared. These people are scared.
Yeah.
These people are petrified, and it's dressed as hate. Dressed as hate, but it's the naked body is fear. That's probably what is opened, not opened, deepened. I know this. It's not something that I've learned. It's like something navigating and really in London, really occupying the black spaces. And it's you know, England's a white country. So it's quite pronounced over there with that discrepancy, but probably in a more subtle, polite way that the oppression. But you know what's possible and what they can do if fear takes the driving seat. Right. I know everything is possible if fear takes the driving seat.
Yeah, I just recently have become, more in the last 5 years, the difference between the sort of class system and also between, you know, colonialism and slavery being the foundation of the racism in the two different countries. Like I guess I didn't grow up understanding colonialism or really taking in the damage that sort of reaped on the whole thing.
Yeah, because, you know, British are great. Their branding budget in terms of racism is amazing. So it's they make you feel like that ain't really happening. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's not really happening, man. It's God, it's Christianity. Boom, read this book, and it's God, this and this, listen to this, and this and that. Yeah. We just want everything. We want everything. We'll give you independence. You're independent. But we control everything. You're independent. No, you're free. You're free. It was in the '60s. You're free. So it's like, I speak English. You know what I mean? You speak English, you know, and you're not in England, you know, there's a lot happening. You know what I mean? That's in plain sight. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just like, you got to just look and go, look what we're doing. You know what I mean? It's like, And yeah, that's the power of that way, level of thinking and how deep the intention is from that space.
The empire runs deep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just that, and then I think true revolution is internally revolting that.
Yeah.
Internally. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And going, no, I don't buy by that. I don't buy by that. I don't buy by that. In order to revolt, you got to see it. And some things you think that is empire, that is actually, you look at it as you.
Yeah.
But it's actually something that is used to control you internally, so you keep on. So I'm a firm believer, but in a revolution, you know what I'm saying, in order to kind of just be yourself.
It's an occupier in your body, and you have
it's
to
a host.
You're hosting a virus.
Hosting.
Yeah,
it's the real pandemic, my guy. Colonization.
I agree. But how was it with? How did you get along with Lakeith? Good.
Yeah, no, Lakeith's cool, man. Lakeith's cool. I mean, we go way back now.
You do?
I mean, we met him. I met him just before we shot Get Out.
Uh-huh.
Just before we shot Get Out, I saw him at Sundance, and we're just on this. We kind of like have these really, kind of. I feel like we're on the same journey.
Yeah.
We have these wee kind of times where we meet and we're doing something random. Remember we was like doing like a monologue for like South African kids, like the Raised Chariot at Carnegie Hall, but we was in the same dressing room. It was like, you have these kind of moments and like, wow, this has happened. Wow, this has happened. So Get Out and Judas are two very significant moments.
It's like, I found his character to be, the idea of selfishness and self-preservation versus community and community preservation. It was like, I thought it was a really smart script, man.
Yeah, no, it was really intelligently written by Shaka King and Will Burson. And then the Lucas Brothers, it was their idea.
I know those guys. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. It was their idea. And it was such an interesting way to get into it and really, really kind of see Chairman's politics in debate and in conflict with the FBI ideology and Lakeith O'Neill being a host for that ideology. Yeah. You know, so it's in that sense, it was, you can kind of understand more about, I always say that in order to see who Chairman Fred is, you got to show who he isn't.
Yeah.
And that's like the point of William O'Neill in this film is to amplify Chairman Fred.
Right. Were you able to talk to his family at all?
Yeah. So the Chicago trip, I went to the Chicago trip in order to talk to the family. Couldn't on that trip because of legal stuff and politics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So then we went a few weeks later with Dominique Fishback, who plays Deborah Johnson, Mama Cool in the film, and all the producers and Shaka and Will. And we went there and we sat down and we had an 8-hour meeting.
Yeah.
That was interesting, with Chairman Fred Jr. And Mama Kua. And it was just, and we was in the Hampton home.
Mm.
And it was intense. It was intense. It was asking us a lot of questions, but more asking us about who we are as people and what's our intentions for this job, and to tell this story, and what's our intentions in terms of like, in art, like why do you make art? Why do people make art?
Wow.
So it was very, you had to dig deep and just be honest.
Yeah.
Just be honest. And I really respected it because he's just like, well, if you're flipping playing Chairman Fred, I need to know who you are. I want to know who you are.
So that was his son?
It was his son, yeah.
And did you walk away from that feel? Did you guys feel good about it?
Yeah, I felt cool. I felt cool. I don't necessarily assume that if you meet someone once, they're like, oh, yeah, the best buddies. Or,
no,
it's
right,
be cool.
Right.
I was just going to go, yeah, like, he kind of, I came out of it. I was honest.
Yeah.
I was just honest. I was me. I was just like, this is me. This is where I'm at. This is my why. This is, yeah. And then like, and then he took us to a couple areas in Chicago. And then we've kept in touch. So yeah, me and Chairman speak quite regularly. So that's cool.
Like, what a fucking, like, outside of like the, like, now I feel like an asshole for even asking you about the Golden Globes in light of the life experience you were given because of this. You know what I mean?
I don't think you're an arsehole, bro. I don't think you're an arsehole, but that's what I'm trying to say. A lot of times it's like, you know what it is? I think I said it in a speech. It's like, when you give everything to something, you're just free. So it's like, it's kind of like, it's not even like I don't care. It's just like, you can't like,
Yeah,
like, it, right. the stuff that I can't open up about the stuff I saw and the stuff that happened after it, in terms of like the cost that it takes on your body to play someone like that, to be a vessel for someone like that in the way that I did it, is a huge cost. It's not a joke. This process made me deeply respect acting more and deeply respect the process more, because it's no joke. So it's that kind of thing where, like, when you get awarded, you kind of like, you're happy, but you know, it's just, you just know the cost. You just know the cost. So it's just a different, you're just looking at it at a completely different point of view. Cause I'm just like, there's a real cost here. You know what I mean? And so it's the, and also, yeah, like that experience and the people you meet is, I just find that incredible.
When you say cost, like, what, and respect, I mean, you did a great job. You know, you did a great job, but what specifically what the cost is, what it took you through emotionally?
Emotionally, I had some health issues at the end.
Oh, really?
So it's that thing where, like, I had to look at that and, like, pick myself back up. Like, so
what, from exhaustion or?
Yeah, a lot of things. You know what I mean, okay. it was like a lot of things. It was a real, you know, a real shutdown. So when you're in that space, you're just like, oh wow, like this is the tax. This is the cost. This is the cost. So when something's really expensive, you really want it, you're like, wow, this is really expensive. Do you know what I mean? So it's just like, whatever you get from it, you're like, wow, no, I know the real value, like, I know the real cost of going in that direction. So it's almost like it's a humbling experience, like winning a Golden Globe, because you're just like, okay, cool. Like, okay, I get it. It's just that, but I had to live it, you know, and I'm not going to, when you have those experiences and you give your all and you give all of your heart, you're liberated from the opinions of others outside of you. It's amazing. And you kind of go, wow, I'm grateful that even like, I'm going to go out there, more people are going to watch Judas because I won a Golden Globe or got nominated for an Oscar, and Lakeith got nominated for an Oscar. The film got nominated for an Oscar. Like, that's amazing. But then you're just like, you're just operating on a different, in different.
Right. You're right. State. Because if you go in, what would you say? If you go with all your heart, you're free. I like that, because you have to be conscious of that. You know, like, that's something you have to learn about yourself and appreciate, because you might miss that too, right?
It's interesting. It's like, it's the fear is giving your heart. Mm. You know what I'm saying? It's like, how many times has fear stopped you from giving all of your heart? So it stopped you from actually tasting true freedom.
Interesting.
You know, and like, the true freedom is really still, is really silence, really, it just is. Like, it's just like going to Golden Globe win, it just is. Something bad happens, just is. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just like, boom. It just is. And so, but it's like, you, when you give everything, you taste that. You taste reality. You don't taste other people's triggers. You don't taste perception. You don't taste judgment. You just taste reality. You go, this is where it is. They just give him this. These body of people have given me an award for something they have seen. That's nice. That's quite a kind thing to do. That's nice. You know what I mean? It's like, and that's not to downplay it. It's not downplay it, but it's just like, you've just gone on a journey and you've given all this, like, this, my heart, bro, my spirit, like, it's all of me.
Yeah. Is this a spiritual idea? Is this something that, do you have a practice that enabled you to see things this way?
In what sense?
Like a meditation practice, a Buddhist practice, because it just, God practice.
I just feel it. Like, it's just the truth. I felt that when I did plays back in the day and I did this play, I played a boxer. They called Sucker Punch at the Royal Court.
Yeah.
I played a boxer and I trained for 3 months and I lost like 42 pounds in 3 months.
Uh-huh.
And I was playing a lightweight boxer. And then the last show, I remember I was like, the lines is, where do I go? What do I do? And then I was there and I was looking at everyone and I was just thinking, and I just like literally broke down on stage. But it actually worked for the scene. So it was all right. But as you're just looking at everyone, you're like, I really cared what everyone thought.
Mm.
Like, I really cared.
Yeah.
And I'll just look at people and they're going to write their reviews. And I'm like, you didn't do 3 minute planks with me. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, how can you, like, you're not equipped to even capture this.
Yeah.
Like, not even like in a kind of like in an egotist. It's just like, bro, I really gave you my body. I gave you everything.
Yeah.
How can you put that into words? Do you know what I'm saying? And I was free. I looked at everyone. I was like, everyone, it's whatever, man. How people feel is whatever. Like, I want people to have a good time. I want them to connect. I want audiences to like to trust me as a person that's going to like give a nice vibe of a story and learn something new and interesting. And like, but it's just that kind of going, wow, like when you give your all, you're just like, meh.
Yeah.
You take it up and you're just like, but then I realized before I really believed that. I'm like, right, this casting director means this and this, this, that. And this reviewer means this and this position means that. And when you give everything up, bow, all that goes.
Right.
You don't even look at it anymore.
Yeah, I can understand that. And I do, like, I have felt that before, but you're fortunate to feel it.
Where have you felt that? When have you felt that?
Like, I believe that last special I did, you know, after doing comedy for 35, 40 years was the best thing I ever did. I could see my entire life's work in it. You know, I've been doing stand-up since I was in my early 20s, and I think that special I did last year with my girlfriend at the time directing was really the best work I'd done. And it felt I could let it go. You know, like, I saw that, you know, I was in it, and I worked hard for it, and I was, you know, and I... My heart was all in it, and I accepted that. I didn't look at it and go like, why'd I do that, or how come I could have? It was the first time that I was like, you know, that's great work.
What do you feel shifted in you? What do you feel shifted in you for you to even allow yourself to give that much of your heart?
Well, some of it had to do with that woman, and then
what was it about the woman that you felt safe?
Yeah, yeah. We were partners for a while, you know. We were involved. She passed away about a year ago.
And I'm so sorry.
So, like, that was there. But also the gift that she gave me in terms of believing in myself as a performer. Like, I spent a lot of time beating the shit out of myself and doing a type of comedy that was aggressive and angry. Mm-hmm. Still is a little bit, but I think there was something about her in my life at that time that grounded me in something, right? And that opened my heart. So now, you know, in light of that, to keep it open, I just did another movie a few months ago where I really kind of, like, you know, like you said, I sort of honored the acting and really, you know, tried to figure out what was great about it and what I was, and I went all in, you know. I did a dialect. I did a guy that wasn't innately me. I couldn't just autopilot it. I really had to do the work, and I felt better about it. I feel really like something moved in my heart, and I'm not completely comfortable with that, but I kind of understand what you're saying.
I'm really happy that you got to that place, though. I mean, because it's the thing is about that place. It's not supposed to be comfortable.
Yeah,
that's how you find true comfort. Mm. You know, it's like you kind of feel like they kind of teach you and condition you to feel like everything should feel comfortable in order to grow to your tallest height as a tree.
Right.
You know? No, you gotta have some rain. It's gotta come.
Sure.
Some birds gotta come and like eat your bark or something like that. This stuff has gotta happen, and it's uncomfortable growing. You know what I'm saying? It's uncomfortable being free.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, and keeping your heart open, buddy.
Yeah, but being free is comfortable.
Yeah. It's over. Yeah, that's true. I don't think understanding that type of freedom. Yeah, you can talk about that as a word, but, you know, if it's personal, it's in your heart, it's tricky business, you know? You want to try to get it done before you go down, you know what I mean?
Down where? What do you mean?
Dead.
Oh, yeah. But then you'll come back. You'll come back and you have to figure out again. This is a whole game, man. This is a whole, like, it's all the computer games got that idea from. If you didn't figure out freedom, all right, here you go, back again.
Yeah.
Similar coordinates, similar things, blah, 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 blah. Here you go, boom, boom, bam, you got to figure this out. You got to figure things out.
Did you guys really shoot that last the assassination on the anniversary of his assassination?
We shot the poisoning scene. We shot that on the 50th anniversary of his assassination. Yeah. Mark, I've never experienced a day like that where like my emotions took over my day. Wow. Like, it was like, I'm usually kind of like put me to a side.
Yeah.
When I'm working. And then, like, but my emotions and how I felt about Chairman Fred and how I felt about what happened really came to the fore, and for Lakeith in a real way as well. So, and we did the speech. Me and Shaka did a speech at the beginning of the day and just honoring him and just realizing that 50 years later, this man still is bringing people together. You know what I'm saying? In this one room in Cleveland.
It's like, oh, it's
in
like
his, a... in his house, in a mock-up of his house 50 years later, you know, and I'm standing here dressed as Chairman Fred. It's a very surreal. And then when I was doing a scene, there's the bit when I was doing the scene and like he has to decide about prison XYZ, and so that, I mean, the I was resisting to the emotions that I was feeling. Then I realized that like, you just got to accept it and use it. It's the truth of what's happening. Oof. You got to go lean into it. So a lot of that was part of that, the kind of intensity of that day.
But it's like when you have something to honor, when you're actually engaged in, like, it's a very rare experience, but there's almost a ritual element to it, that you guys were so aware of that and you were summoning something and you were getting closure and moving forward at the same time in this space of this anniversary. And, you know, what a rare and amazing day that is to make that
choice.
That's
what I'm trying to say. It's like this stuff, like what a day that, like, to experience those kinds of emotions, to even just be aligned, to be on that path.
Yeah.
That you are in a mock-up of his house.
Yeah.
The day of his 50th anniversary, filming that scene.
Unbelievable.
You're just like, you had an experience that you just can't buy. You can't purchase. You can't, you just have to be it.
It's great.
And that is just like, it's incredible. That is looking back, is incredible. And I feel really blessed to be a part of.
So were you always a serious actor, or how you've been acting a long time, like since you were a kid?
Yeah, since I was like 13, I got into it. 13, improv. I got into comedy first. I was doing comedy back in the day. I did a lot of comedy shows, a lot of comedy skits. I used to do sketches on YouTube, like used to musical parodies. I used to do all of that stuff. Like majority of my career before Sicario was comedy, and so improv. In improv, it's like the biggest reaction you would get is sometimes you would make kids laugh. It was this place called Annishare, and basically you pay £5 and you go, and there's just kids that are from estates as well. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of go there, and it's like for underprivileged kids, and you go there and you kind of like, you have this big stage, everyone's looking at you, and it's like me and you, Mark, doing a scene.
Yeah.
The teacher goes, first line, why did you do that?
Yeah.
And then you got to go.
Right.
13-year-old doing that is petrifying. And if you're rubbish, if you're crap, they just laugh at you, or they'll text, or they'll get bored. It's kids watching. But it was such an incredible training ground because they were honest. Right. They were like, we don't think you're that interesting.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And like, you got to do something interesting. So I realized that, like, and I was a joker at school, but it took a while before I could really be able to feel confident in bringing that funny element, that comedic element into improv. And then, so I did that. And then
you actually did TV shows, like sketch shows and stuff, right?
Yeah, I did Harry and Paul. I did Mitchell and Webb.
Is there a rule in England that you have to name a sketch show after two guys, or how's
that? I think that's a mandate. I think that's the law. Two white men have to, that's how it is. Boris and Tony,
So that's all your experience was in comedy. That's a trip, man. Because Sicario, I love that movie. I watch it a lot.
Thank you.
And you were great.
I love that film as well. Thank you.
Because like, I'm a guy as well who has spent his life in comedy, and like, I'm doing serious roles. And like, what was your first experience with that coming out of comedy? Because for me, my comedy's pretty serious, but I can be funny. But I'm pretty serious, and I'm pretty, emotional. And like, when I started to do it, feel comfortable with it, it was sort of a relief to not be funny.
Yeah, you know what it is? It's funny. It's like, I remember I was 19. I did this show called Psychoville. Amazing show. Like, did you watch The League of Gentlemen? Have you watched that? This British show, League of Gentlemen, kind of surreal comedy, kind of obscure.
I didn't watch it.
The guys that Steve Pemberton, Reese Shear Smith, Mark Gatiss wrote it as well. And then, they did, Steve and Reese did a show called Psychoville. I did Psychoville when I was like 19. It was a comedy show, like kind of like a horror comedy show. It's really funny, really interesting. And then I was 19 doing it, and the director, Matt Lipsy, was doing a scene. Like, this is how surreal it is.
Yeah.
I was like trying to get some keys off these Siamese twins in the van.
Sure, that happens.
And then like one of them woken up and I had to kiss him. Yeah. It was the whole, and then it's doing that. And then I think I did a line and I did it in a certain way. And it didn't ring true to me, but I just did it. And he pulled me to the side. Matt pulled me to the side and said, Daniel, and literally said something that would change my life forever. Daniel, never play the funny, always play the truth. And he just walked away.
Yeah.
It was like a boom. That's a foundation. Like, no matter what the script is or what the genre is, if I'm playing the truth and the writer's truth and the perspective's truth, then So I did this show called The Fades, which is an incredible writer, Jack Thorne. And the character is really funny. He's like this geeky guy. Yeah. He's really funny. Yeah. On paper, you're like laughing out loud. But he doesn't, a lot of funny people don't think they're funny. They're just being honest. You know what I'm saying? And there's like, and so if just saying the lines in a really truthful way allows the audience to find it funny, is how I felt like. So that's, so then pivoting out into more serious or doing more serious stuff. It's kind of both disciplines help each other, because when you're doing dramatic things, you are more in tune with rhythm and timing. You know what I'm saying? You understand the importance of rhythm and timing for story purposes, to hit a certain way, so a beat can hit a certain way, because in comedy, it's all about rhythm and timing. So it's that kind of like, and so that would help that. And then your truth thing would help your serious stuff and help your comedy stuff, which is, because serious is all about truth, and it will help your comedy stuff and this is that and the other. So I always had like kind of different avenues, because when I did improv, I would just challenge myself. So a lot of my improv sometimes was serious. I would just challenge myself. You could just play and go, what am I scared of? What haven't I done? Like, go there, just do that. Boom, just do that in that way. Just do that in that way and take the scene a certain way. So I like diversifying, like I would call them flows, like skill sets and that.
Sure. And also, like, I think a lot of like what I have learned over from doing comedy, from doing improv, I would imagine too, is that you really learn how to own your space on stage or on screen or in a scene. I think that timing, what you're talking about, that sort of being grounded in what you're doing, in your own honesty and taking your time, is something that you're very good at and something that's necessary.
Thank you. But you know what it is? It's like, I see that with Olivia Colman, because I don't know if you know about Olivia Colman.
Jesus,
like, you know,
so
her,
good.
You know her back, you know her background is comedy. You know that, right?
Yeah, sure. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So she was in Mitchell and Webb as well. Yeah. She was in that show with about two white men.
With you.
I actually, I met her at 18 and she gave me the most amazing advice at 18, and we shared a car.
What'd
she
you
was
say?
So lovely. I was deciding whether I was going to drama school or working, doing this acting thing.
Yeah.
And no one in my life was doing acting. So I didn't really have anyone to turn to.
Right.
To ask for advice about what should I do with my life? I was 18. And everyone was telling me to go to school. And she weighed up the options and was like, it sounds like you want to just do it. And I know that's it's scary because everyone thinks you're going to mess up, but you can always go back. And I was like, yeah. And then I'll never forget that. She was so amazing. But anyway, Olivia, she's like, when you see like someone like Tyrannosaur, have you watched Tyrannosaur? That was the first time I saw her do serious work. It's a Paddy Considine film and Peter Mullen's in it. It's like an indie in England. And then like, so anyway, she's doing that. And then I realized that like her comedy, what happens is that you know the pockets.
Yeah.
You just know the pockets.
Right.
And then when you transfer that understanding, because if you're in a funny scene, you just know the pocket. Like, you know, like you look at a scene and go, what's the funniest thing about this scene? All right, cool.
Right.
Cool. How can I make that hit?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not your line. How can I make that hit? I need to hit it like, boop, and then boom. You know what I'm saying? So it's that kind of, when I see her going to the drama space, she just knows the pockets. Like, she just knows the pockets. And that's, I think you learn, like, you just have to take it, because you have to make someone laugh objectively away from you, but you can't find that funny. And you have to find a pocket.
But the pocket has to do with how the character fits. I mean, it's a definition of character, right?
Because
I just watched her in, I just watched Fleabag again, and she's like a genius in that.
Yeah,
and it's a completely horrific comedic character, the insecurity of it and, you know, the self-involvement of it. But she plays it completely straight, and it's like just brutal comedy, that thing.
Yeah, yeah. It keeps it real and knows the pocket that will be the funniest version of real. It's just something I see Olivia, I'm like, she just gets it. She just gets it. I think she's delicious. It's like when she acts, I find it delicious.
And you grew up looking at, watching her, right? Because she was on a lot of television, right?
Didn't she's on TV. Yeah. She was on Peep Show, this show called Peep Show.
Yeah.
By Mitchell and Webb. And then she was just so funny in it, and really, really, like, she was a leading lady in it. And it was just like, it was so amazing to see her pivot and now become this big star. But it's there's a lot of people that you grew up just watching and go, they were like Martin Freeman. Martin Freeman is, I think Martin Freeman is the king of pockets. Like, I think he's great. Like, so I would say him, like, he's almost like a lot. There's so many. He's got so many sons.
Yeah,
he's got so many sons and so many daughters. His performance in The Office, has so many sons and so many daughters.
Yeah.
Like, because every, and like him and Sherlock, he just knows how to hit it. Like he just hits it, bro. And it's just like, and it's just about, it's just, and it's like he's, it's like it's not happening. And he's still telling the story, but he's still, and when you actually engage with him, yeah, it's like when, it's like, you know what Martin Freeman's like? It's like when you're watching a game and you see a player and then they're doing their thing and you go, oh yeah, no, it's cool. This is ticking. And then when you watch him, you're like, this guy is incredible. But when the game's happening, you can't really see what's happening. But like, yeah, he's got, like, I think everyone is like, so many comedies, like how people deliver, especially men, how white men deliver their lines is a result of a Martin Freeman idea. You know what I'm saying? It's like, he just went bow, bow, bow in the office and he does this way. And then everyone is, everyone just took it and ran with it. I think I said it to, I met him. I said it to him. I think he was a bit drunk, so I don't know if he remembered, but, but yeah, so I to find in pockets.
They took the drive shaft of Martin. They took the, you know, the engine. And then they worked it into their own engine.
Yeah, worked it on, but if the people are just by osmosis, by like subconsciously inspired by what he's doing there. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, because really and truly, Ricky Gervais is the funny man. David Brent's the funny, funny man. Like, and like Martin's character has the story in The Office. Do you know what I'm saying? He has the story. It's kind of like Josh, John Krasinski in The American, like that guy, that character, same character, has a story.
Yeah, but he, you know, like, yeah, he's one of those slow burn guys, and he, like, he really kind of his, he takes his time, and he lets things sit. It's, you know, it's owning that space, man.
It's very confident. It's very confident. You have to be very confident in what you do in order to go, I know this is a comedy. Yeah. I'm still gonna play it in this way. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's an audacious position. That's why I respect it. And I clocked that in Sicario. Again, like, I was on Sicario, and it was all of them. They were just like audacious. They were like, nothing less. Benicio would be just cutting lines. Less, 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 less. And then I was like, wow, I didn't understand it. Because I thought they were like, ah, are they cheating? This is like, but it's that thing where, like, it's just like you know, you just distill it to what actually matters. And then, but to do that in a comedy is like very difficult, because your instinct is to go, I want to make the crew laugh. You know what I mean? It's like, and it's just like, no, the audience will laugh when the situation is funnier.
And what was the process like with Jordan?
Jordan is amazing, because Jordan's like, comes from an improv background.
Yeah,
you know, so
yeah,
it was like, we just kind of get it. We just get each other, and like on set, you can kind of be loose with it and like, and go, yo, this isn't working. And we are both confident that we'll find something new.
Right.
And like, we'll be doing a take and it wouldn't, and we don't know what is going to work, and we just try it out in the take. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just that it's kind of like, he's just very much from the same school of thinking in terms of how
so
I.
So you guys improvised a lot?
Yeah, there was a lot of, and with Alison as well. Like, Alison contributed a lot. She's got improvisation background as well. So it was like a lot of improv, and a lot of like even like the Give Me the Keys scene was like improvised. That was like in the moment. Like, we kind of, it was a whole scene, and we kind of took it out to bare bones, and it was just like, Give Me the Keys. And we did that. And then like, and there was a couple other scenes that a couple other moments of just improv and made up in the moment. And Jordan is, yeah, he's just like, he gets it. He's like, he's an actor.
Yeah, but also he had like, I think he had such a specific vision of what that movie was going to look like, that you guys had space. So he knew exactly what the space he was providing and how it was all going to fit. Those people who can direct like that, who know that no matter what's going on set, they're editing it in their head as they go along. So they, you know, they have the freedom to take those chances.
Yeah, and I think he just gave me space. And for me, it was like, because the story was so strong, the writing was so strong, that it kind of allowed me to really practice the art of refinement, to give a really refined, minimalist performance. So that when it does go tits up, goes fucking crazy at the end, it's more pronounced. Because it was so suppressed.
Right. Well, you did the Martin thing. You kind of let it,
Bro, it's where like my inspos, like there's a couple people that I'm like, yo, I like the way, I see it as music though. I see a lot of people go, I just like his flow.
Yeah.
I like his flow. Like Christopher Walken, I was thinking the other day, Christopher Walken, I see him like Snoop Dogg. There's no one like him.
Yeah.
There's no one like, because you can't even copy it.
Yeah.
Like, if you like, you can't. Like, I watched King of New York in a pandemic, I watched King of New York, and I was just like, he did this scene. Have you seen King of New York?
Yeah.
He did this scene where he's there, and he's on a dinner table, and he's about to, he's about to say a joke. He's about to say a joke, and then he has a space for a joke, thinks about the joke, then laughs at the joke, then composes himself about the joke, prepares himself to say the joke, and then says the joke. All in these, like, yo, Mark, do you know how much confidence you have to do that? Like, to do that in your close-up.
Yeah.
God, I'm just going to think this and you will know. Like, all right, like, that shit is like, bro, that's, put that in my veins, bro. That's just be present.
Yeah.
Just do it and like, go with what you feel. And like, the director can cut it if it's rubbish. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, but it's like, they just did it. And it's like, stuff like that. It's like, I see it like, I'm like, that flow is somewhere else. Someone's like, he's on another planet right there. You can't really replicate it. So I can see that Martin did what Martin was, the big inspiration. Like, I can see that pocket that I, like, it's the way to tell a story and also make the funnier bits funnier by being the real straight man.
That's interesting. You know, so these are your real teachers, really.
Yeah, it's like kind of, it's like you just see something and you're just inspired.
Yeah.
And you're going to go, wow, that's like, I really like that. That's really interesting to me. I really like the best way this person did that. And like, it just speaks, you're not even, I just watch films because I want to watch films, but you just go, wow, like, that's a really interesting way of doing it. And I would never have thought about that. That's very unique. And you can't not be changed by it. You can't have the old idea anymore. You kind of go, when you're doing it, go, oh yeah, there was a whole thing there. You just inspired. You just moved.
I used to feel that way when I watched Dennis Hopper, where you're like, oh my God, it's like a different time zone. These people, they operate in a different time zone. You know, it's their own planet. They're dictating. Like, when you engage with those people, where you watch them, you're like, they're completely unique to themselves. So they can they can invent the pace. They can invent the time. They can, like, it's what you said. It comes from confidence. I think also with some people from, you know, experience, it seems. People get better as they get older.
Yeah, but you know what it is, bro? If I'm being totally transparent, my favorite actors in the world are child actors.
Yeah.
They're the best. They're the best, without a shadow of a doubt. The minute they turn 13, shit happens, and I don't know what's going on. And then you have to work your ass off to get to, like, I don't know, Anthony Hopkins' age, and then you're like, I'm free. I'm a child again. Yeah. But it's that thing where, like, but majority of times, it's like, I'm more inspired by kids' performances than anyone else. Like, because they're just there.
Yeah.
And they're really listening.
Right.
And they really take it. It's like, that for me is like, that I look at certain things, I go, there's too much life has happened for me to even get to that point. You know what I mean? It's like, I have to so much to undo to get to what this child is, as like, so something like Beasts of No Nation. Yeah.
Yeah.
With the Idris Elba film. I think it's Abraham Attar. It's the last scene. I was just like, bro, like, this is so pure.
Yeah.
Like, this is just so honest.
Yeah.
And you can't teach it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's I just think kids know it. Kids are the best actors. When you get a great kid's performance, I'm just like, I'm always really blown away by how simple it is.
So do you, like, find yourself trying to get past the clutter of your experience when you're getting to the emotional part of a role?
I did this episode of Black Mirror and the director said something crazy interesting.
Yeah.
He sat us down, me and Jess Brown Finley, and he did hot seating. He did hot seating with us, kind of answer questions as characters, and then we just learning about the characters. And then at the end, it was like 2 hours. And it was really intense.
Yeah.
And at the end, it was like, all right, cool, forget about it. I'm like, what do you mean forget about it? Like, you made me work. What are you talking about? Like, and he was like, nah, like, forget about it. Because, like, you know, if it makes sense, it'll stick.
Right.
And that's how I feel. You do all this work. You do all this work.
Right.
And then you just got off. A band, let it go. Forget about it. You show up on set, you are just there. And it will show up for you.
Yeah.
And it will show up for you. It will show up for you in a real way because you've created a body.
Exactly.
You've created a body. You created an outlook, a perspective, a way. And it will just show up. And it will just show up. All the decisions you made, the intention, it will just show up. And you don't even realize you're doing it. I look at Judas. I don't remember those takes. I don't remember the takes.
Right.
Like, but usually in performance, I'll be like, oh yeah, they used that take. They used that take. I remember that day. I don't blanked out. But I literally did go, all right, cool. I'm going to stand here. And I've learned all this stuff. And I've taken all this stuff in. And I'm going to just allow the spirit to speak through me. And I'm just going to, like, all these things you can lean on. It's like triggers to kind of assist you to stay on path.
Yeah.
I mean, on what you're doing.
Right. Right. Choices.
Yeah, I wouldn't say choice. Like, I don't even see it as choice. It's like, I don't believe I have the power to choose.
Mm.
I think if I have the power to choose, then you're seeing the performance.
Okay, so if you do the work.
So it's like the stuff that happens, if that is a certain scene and I've got to do it in a certain way and I feel a certain way, then I'm going to do it in that certain, like, I'm just going to do it in that certain way. And I'm going to, that's what I think. I'm going to do it in that certain way. There is no choice being made. That's the way.
Right.
And it's like, it's the unapologeticness and the audaciousness of going, this is it.
Yeah.
Because I can always stand on that, Mark. Yeah. I can always stand on that.
Yeah.
So if someone says, if I'm trying to go, oh, I think this is a choice and this will make them feel that. Yeah. Then I'm like, I'm manipulating them.
Right.
I'm going,
right.
Ooh, yeah, yeah, boom. And if I don't get what I want, then I'm going to be self-loathing and beat myself up. You know what? I created a process to minimize the self-loathing.
Yeah.
To minimize it. I've literally actively, I want to be able to watch my stuff and objectively grow and learn from my own performance and go, oh, okay, cool. I know what, that was honest, but would you do that now? Probably not. Why did you do that? Okay, cool. Next one, try this, try that. And then you're like honing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's because that whole like getting at yourself is, it just ruins what you're doing.
I spent more than half my life getting at myself.
yeah.
And then eventually, you know, if you're lucky, it lifts, you know, it goes away a little bit.
Yeah,
and
I think you can't rely on like, it just leaving. You got to actively decide.
Yeah, for sure.
And
right.
Set up something to help you with that. Because it's just like, because it's just can be paralyzing. It can be.
You found yourself putting something in place to stop your self-loathing.
Yeah. It's like, I've got like, because I'm going, this is my heart.
Right.
Boom.
Yeah.
This is how I see. This is what I think. This is how I feel. Yeah.
Without embarrassment.
Without embarrassment. And then people have an opinion and they're saying what they think. They're not saying what they feel. So they've got different level of investment.
Right.
It's going, oh, this is what I think about how you feel.
So it doesn't matter.
So I'm saying it doesn't matter. It's just that going, if you're thinking of yourself like that, yeah? If you're thinking of yourself like that and going, I think about how I feel, then you're going to be, that's going to be a lot for you. That's going to hurt you.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But if you're not taking it in that way, then that's just what someone else is thinking. You're not agreeing with that, the kind of way of thinking. So that's the kind of thing. It's just going, that's how I feel. I look at things, go, that's how I feel.
You're not looking outside yourself and you have boundaries.
Yeah, I actively like go, okay, I have to give my all to this. And that's why I'm really forensic about the stuff I do, because I got to believe in it.
Sure.
To help with the love, like to help with the process of like, no. But it's just that kind of go, yeah, and just enjoy the moment. Enjoy it. I like having fun. I do this because I want to have fun. If I wanted to make money, I'd work in finance. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I want to like be comfortable. I want to like have a great life. And that's expensive nowadays. But it's like, but it's that thing where like, it's about having fun and enjoying yourself. So you got to put systems in place and think in a way to help you with that.
I bet. So you're excited about SNL?
Yeah, I am. I'm buzzing for that. I can't even lie, man. I'm buzzing for that. Because you know what it is? I realize I ain't really got an off-screen persona like that. No one really even knows who I am like that.
Exactly.
So I'm just kind of like it's kind of really free in position. So I'm just going to be like just buzzing.
You know what yeah,
I'm
because you've got, and also nothing. You've got all this improv superpower that no one knows about.
Yeah, no one has any idea. That's why, like, I went to Donald Glover did one.
Yeah.
And I went to his one. And then I was there and I was like, wow, this is like the biggest challenge in the industry. It's like, this is the process that will make you grow the most.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, because it's just like, you don't have a show on Monday, you have a show on Saturday.
Right.
I mean, it's like, that's what we used to do every day. We used to like do improv and like go away. A group of us would go away for 20 minutes and then come back and perform that play.
Yeah,
to the class, and you just have to have a play at the end of every week. You just got to get one. So it reminds me of that, and you just have to show up and kind of, and your fight or flight comes in, and you just think of all these ideas and this is that and the other. So SNL doing that, like I'm buzzing. I can't even lie, I'm buzzing for it. I'm like, I'm ready for that.
Fun, man.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge. I'm gonna enjoy it. We're gonna have a party. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm gonna have a party.
Yeah, why not, man? Well, look, I'm a big fan. I'm glad we got to talk about this stuff. I really enjoy the work. I like all the movies, and you know, it was enlightening hearing your perspective on this stuff. It's very helpful for me to hear anybody who has challenged themselves and realizes that you know, freedom isn't comfortable.
No, that's what makes it comfortable.
Yeah, I mean,
so,
I do.
But yeah, no, I appreciate you, man. I appreciate all the stuff that you're putting out there, Mark, man. You're really
thanks,
creating an incredible legacy, bro.
I appreciate it, man. Take care. I'll see you soon.
Take care. See you soon. All right, peace.
Okay, that was Daniel Kaluuya. And he'll be hosting Saturday Night Live this weekend. You can watch him in Judas and the Black Messiah or Queen and Slim or Black Panther or Get Out. Any number of those things. Good actor. Interesting presence. And now you know who his biggest influence is. All right? Happy birthday to my brother, Craig Maron. You made it. Another year. How old are you, buddy? What are you, 55? You're 55. Happy birthday. I love you, man. I'll play some guitar. Cat angels everywhere. Hey folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here. And when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me: a tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.